Welcome to Conversations with Consequences, now on EWTN Radio. I'm your host, Ashley McGuire, and I'm happy to have on the show an old friend of mine, Dr. Sophia Aguirre, and she is currently serving as the president of Catholic International University, but she also has an extensive educational background in the field of economics, and she's served at the Holy See and also for two White House administrations as a commissioner and advisor. So she's truly an expert in her field and has recently taken the reins at Catholic International University. So we wanted to have her on not only to discuss this university, but also they have a very big gala coming up with an exciting honoree, the founder of Hallow, the prayer app that so many have downloaded and used daily. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Dr. Aguirre.
Thank you, Ashley, for having me here. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to talk to you today.
So let's start with the university. It used to be known as Catholic Distance University, and the name recently changed to Catholic International University. Can you tell us what is Catholic International University? It's no doubt piques the interest of listeners because we're in this sort of post-COVID era where so many people have learned to engage in remote and digital ways.
Thank you. Well, yes, Catholic University has existed for 42 years, 40 of which has been Catholic Distance University. We are today the only fully online, fully accredited Catholic institute of higher education in the world, to the best of our knowledge. Our mission is to communicate the heart and the mind of the church through online education, and a space where we are pioneers. We were the second university to go online, and the purpose was to reach more people. My predecessor, who was a real visionary, Dr. Mary Mount, saw the potential of online education, and she went back to school at the time in the 90s to develop a methodology to teach education online. She realized it was a different space, a different world, and she wanted to keep what always characterized us, that is a person-centered, rigorous, and faithful to the teaching of the church education. Since 2023, we have begun the implementation of what is called the Building the University of the Future, is our name of our strategic plan. And what is that? It's a university that offers personal, rigorous education in the context of a global campus. We are not an extension of a university. We are a university that is online, without uprooting our students from wherever they are, family, communities. We make education accessible at prices that are very reasonable because we don't have the overhead and the cost of many other universities. We have innovative curricula. And what we seek is to really provide access to quality education to those who are seeking it and don't have that possibility. So in that sense, we do have a very important role in higher education, and in many ways, I would say unique. We are somebody who seek to leave that mission of the church for higher education, which is to being born from the heart of the church, communicate that. And that for us means being person-centered, bringing the truth to people in all fields and to serve the world in all the different fields of knowledge.
Well, that's great. And that's interesting because it's you're developing this strategic plan at a time when interest in higher education is declining, at least in the United States. I recently read that the percentage of high schoolers that are interested in a higher education, a college degree, is down by 28 points. And I think one of the reasons you touched on is because of the cost. So where do your students draw from? Are there countries that are predominant? Where are people logging in from to study?
The reason you asked me earlier, the reason for the change in our name, until now, the Catholic Distance University had only focused on the United States, and we were for 40 years only a department of theology, the largest in the country at the time, but the only one, only of theology. In 2023, precisely because There's so many people, as you say, need education, relevant education, impactful education. And with the core, the wonderful message we have of the Catholic richness, all right, intellectual richness, we decided to go to the world. And so we began our expansion. We are going to Latin America this year. And then we will go, we are already in Africa, Asia, England, interesting enough. And we have diversified our offerings. So now we teach not only theology, but we have a Department of Liberal Arts Education. We have an education. We have a Department of Business and Ecclesial Management. And we do have a Department of Integrated Technologies with a master's on AI that is will be start this spring. So we are diversifying both in thematically and geographically. And our students, therefore, our population has changed. Before, the majority of our students were people working in the church, serving the church in one way or another, catechists, directors of programs, serving in different ways within the Catholic Church. Since then, now we have students of all walks of life. We also have expanding some of our offerings, undergraduate offerings, and a master's on Catholic social teaching in Spanish. So we also are reaching the growing Catholic Spanish population. And what is wonderful is that in these times where not only people are questioning higher education, as you mentioned, but also the universities are in crisis, right? They have lost in many ways the reason for its existence. We want to be that beacon of life, right? And on light, of light, bringing back really what is our mission from the heart of the church to teach the world in a relevant and impactful way. I would say our diversification of academic offerings in the past 2 years have been guided by that. Where we need to, people need us, education. You can think AI, ecclesial management. So priests really can focus on their mission of sanctification, right? Education, and then also have that impact precisely because they are so such crucial aspects of our education, of our life. So that's what we are doing, trying to be impactful and helpful.
You mentioned that you've mentioned a few times that your university is person-centric. And so,
Yes.
you know, I think right now there's a big conversation going on about how tech is dehumanizing phones, screens, that we're kind of losing personal connection. So, how do you achieve that person-centric experience when I'm assuming in many cases your students aren't, you know, meeting their fellow students or their professors face to face?
Well, this is very interesting because you're right. Our courses are online and asynchronous. That's what provides this incredible flexibility. And yet, people really connect with one another. Our methodology is, again, we are pioneers in this field. We are not post-COVID-19. One more core, wonderful online course extension of our university. This is what we've been doing for many years and way before COVID-19. And so our methodology is such, and I would say that is our gold mine, right? And is person-centered because we engage our students. The students engage one another, even though they don't do it in real time at the same time. They do connect with one another, discuss. So no, definitely it's person-centered. We really seek our students. You really don't tell them how to think, what to think. We teach them how to think, right? And engage one another. Disagreement is not a problem, right? We can dialogue and learn from one another. I mean, the basic tenets of Catholic liberal education that has been always the best service the church has done in higher education or education in general, I would say, is what we are living day to day. And I would say precisely for that reason, is that our retention rates are Ivy League retention rates. We have even one thing I didn't mention is we offer also continuing education, and an extension of that is our service to the prisoners. We have reached 3.3 million classes taken by prisoners in more than 1,600 prisons in 46 states plus the District of Columbia, and with a completion rate of 87%.
Wow.
Why? Why, right? And think the hope, discovering the meaning of their suffering or the need to make reparation, the fact that God loves them in spite of everything. And that not only for prisoners, for every single one of our students. We really are changing lives. And you see it, I can give you so many examples of this day in, day out, of people across life, whether they are professionals established, a judge sitting right in a high court, a doctor that deals with issues of end of life or birth, a truck driver that is trying to bring his family back, and he has to take obligatory stop. He has access to internet, and it's then when he engages in his courses in Spanish, AA, is an associate degree, focus on Catholic social teaching, trying to find and get to know his faith more, love God more, and help his family come back, or serve in his parish, on people who have a lot of problems and challenges in their lives. And so the way we engage, right, through technology, through bringing the truth in a person-centered way, because we engage, but we engage not always at the same time, right? But in a period of time.
You've mentioned AI a few times, and the world kind of immediately took note, I feel like, when Pope Leo chose the name Leo, because the last Leo wrote the encyclical Rerum Novarum, which was about the last real major revolution, the Industrial Revolution, and the role of man in a post-industrial world. And now we're really in a post-technological revolution world. And I think we're only at the very beginning of seeing hopefully a fruitful conversation pioneered by the Pope, who's made explicit that he cares about this issue about AI and the role of technology. What do you see, I mean, beyond just what you're doing with the university, sort of the role of the Catholic Church vis-a-vis AI and technology more broadly.
Well, this is interesting. Right before joining Catholic University, I took a year to research AI and how the methodology of integral economic development, integral economics, can engage AI and help the direction of AI in a way that is human-centered and not reducing humanity. I certainly see, as you say, Pope Leo, his name alone says a lot, right? And we are facing a new revolution that I would say is very important to realize. It's not just one more revolution. AI is omnipresent, is in every aspect of our lives to a degree that not other technology has reached us, engaged us, or direct us. And this is why it's so important that we understand it. And this is part of the reason why, again, Catholic International has never been afraid of technology. We are pioneers on education on technology. But we need to engage it in a healthy way. And that's why back in 2023, we already set up as one of the priorities, the programs we were going to develop. It was on AI and specifically prudential design of AI. So we want to equip people. I think that that's what we need to, not only to understand how technology works, but how do we engage it and develop it in a way that is human person-centered. As you say, we are rapidly becoming, right, very technically savvy. Everything is technology, but we need the wisdom of the heart to really, as Pope Francis said this some time ago, right? We need the wisdom of the heart to come into this engagement of technology, and that's what Catholic universities are there for. So we do want to engage it. And there is not a rule of thumb, right? I think you need to look at the context. At least for my experience on the year that I was doing research, and since then, colleagues have joined us to develop the program, experts in AI, is it for health can be very helpful. You can think from taking notes to, helping provide more information and context in diagnosis. Training far away physicians, where you can use, for example, virtual reality to be more present, right, than before, and bring the expertise of other more developed countries sometimes to countries that have no access to the same thing. And that's one example in so many that we can use. But that's very different from a doctor just using AI instead of using his critical analytical thinking experience and person-centered, right? Pay attention to you as a person. And that can dehumanize in the process, reduce our analytical and critical thinking, our capacity of awe. I've been thinking more and more, as you know, because I have taken one of your children to the museums, I love to foster in young children, that capacity of admiration, of observation, of looking at the beauty that God has put in our place and share in the joy. I think that one of the most important things in this technology age in which we are living is to really recover that capacity of awe. And that is not only not giving access to children to technology that can be harmful, not helpful, but also as an adult, right? I mean, nothing happens. We turn off the phone, right? Or we just simply don't bring it into the dining room. I always joke, but I think it's important to say that one of the most humbling experiences is to forget your phone because you realize that after all, you're not as important as you thought, right? The world continue going, the university continue functioning and serving. The world has not changed because you have not access to your phone for a whole day. In fact, nobody can communicate with you. And in a sense, this might seem simple, but it's extremely important. Right. And so when we think about the use of technology, the development, the space where we let this technology come into our lives, is very important to keep that sense, right, of relation, the person that is in front of you or the person with whom you are communicating through this tool. And I think that that is something that at Catholic International we really do well. And many people do well, right? Like, hello, look, you can tell me more invasion than your own prayer, right? I mean, come on. And yet here you have an example of a very innovative app that has brought people closer to the most important relationship we have in life, which is God himself. And not in a generic way, in a very person-centered one-to-one relationship. So it can be done. We just have to use it well and be aware of what we are doing when we engage technology.
Well, Dr. Aguirre, we are out of time. I wish we had more time to talk about your gala, which I'm very much
Oh.
looking forward to emceeing. But the first thing that came to my mind when you mentioned awe, in terms of, the Catholic Church and the faith combined well with technology, is the Hallow app. And you're honoring Alex Jones, who founded that app. What a great service he's done. And there really are, trying to be positive, looking around. There are many ways that the church is
Yes.
engaging and reaching into people's lives and using technology. to create a person-centered experience, as you say. So we thank you so much for your time. Where can our listeners find out about your university?
CatholicIU.edu. Again, CatholicIU.edu, Catholic International University. And we can find there our gala as well. And yes, we are thrilled to have the opportunity to honor Hallow, with whom we share so much in terms of our mission and goals. So thank you for having us.
Thank you so much,
And
Ida. Thank you.
bye-bye.
Welcome to Conversations with Consequences, now on EWTN Radio. I'm your host, Ashley McGuire, and we are marking Veterans Day this week with a very special guest. Her name is Michelle McAloon. She is a retired Army officer who has now become a canon lawyer and podcaster, and she's here to mark Veterans Day with us this week, especially to talk about something many of our listeners may not have heard of. I certainly hadn't. It's called the Catholic Women's Military Council. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Well, thank you, Ashley. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to come on and talk.
Great. So, can you describe what this Women's Council is and what your role is or was with the council?
Sure. It's a Military Council of Catholic Women. It is a it's actually a worldwide organization. It's a nonprofit subsidiary of the Archdiocese for Military Services USA. The Archdiocese for Military Services, they serve active duty personnel, soldiers, sailors, Marines. They serve all of those people. They serve veterans, and they serve federal government workers living overseas. So there are 220 of these MCCW kind of installations around the world. And there is, in a lot of these installations, there is something called a CWOC, a Catholic Women of the Chapel. And these are groups of women, military, retiree, spouses, veterans, that get together. And what they do is they work with the chaplain, the priest chaplain, and they do evangelization, they do study, it's a social activity, it's a support network. It's really a great network of women across the world.
Sure. So Amanda Fox, the president of the Catholic Women's Military Council, recently said, "Our military-affiliated women shoulder extraordinary burdens, women who wear the uniform and women who serve by supporting the uniform. They live out their vocations, hold families together, serve their chapels, they deploy, they become the whole home front. They embody the gospel in motion." I've written a book about this. I think there's a real push to deny that men and women are different, and certainly men and women both valiantly serve in the military, but what are some ways that military service affects women differently than men?
In a lot of different ways. I always say, and I'm probably going to get blown up for saying this, but men can do things women that cannot do. Women see things that men cannot see, right? And we're different in our abilities, in our talents. And you see that come out in the military. You see that especially in military units. You see where women can see things and command and help commanders see things that they normally could not see. In civilian and home life, the spouses, I tell you, they are heroic, especially some of the senior spouses that I've met that have had to bear and shoulder the burden of maybe 10 to 15 moves over 30 years, of enrolling new children, children into new schools, of repeated deployments, of and then having a soldier, sailor, Marine, Air Force come back with PTSD or come back with health issues. There are some absolutely heroic women serving both in and out of uniform for the United States.
Well, tell us a little bit about your transition from serving in the military to becoming a canon lawyer and podcaster.
Well, you know what? So what I did, I was in the reserves for a lot of years. I was active duty and then I was reserves. I was living overseas following my husband, who was a U.S. defense attaché. And we were in Croatia. And I always had an itch. I always had an itch that I wanted to answer. What does it really mean to be a human being? Right? Comes from the Terminator. If you ever watched the movie, the Terminator series, that's the one question they ask. And that itch, I had to answer that itch. I started doing distance studying for theology, ended up at Leuven, where my husband was stationed in Belgium, Catholic University of Leuven, finished my degree there, and then went to Paris again, where my husband was the defense attaché, and I got my degree in canon law. And all of that was to answer the question, what does it mean to be a human being? And the answer to that question, you wind up at the door of the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. I absolutely believe that. And so that's how I became a canon lawyer. And then I was working on a radio station in Alabama, and I started my podcast, Crossword Books, because I really like books. So I interview authors, and it all kind of fits together.
Wow, that's really interesting. Archbishop Timothy Broglio just announced that there will be a mission ready forum and that it will be a council that'll take place in DC. Is this something have ever attended in the past?
No, I haven't attended in the past, and I actually look forward to it. It will bring women from probably literally all over the world to talk about, again, evangelization, of study, of theology, of how to best serve the Catholic chaplains, priest chaplains on the post around the world.
Well, Michelle McAloon, we thank you so much for your service, especially this week as we commemorate our veterans, and especially for your unique contribution to honoring and ministering to our women in uniform. Where can our listeners find your podcast and find out more about what you do?
Well, my website is bookclues.com, and my podcast is Crossword Books, and that's on Spotify and Apple and all of those. Ashley, thank you. Thank you for honoring veterans. I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Thanks. God bless.
Welcome back to Conversations with Consequences here on EWTN Radio. I'm delighted to be joined by our TCA chaplain, Monsignor Roger Landry, who has just returned from the USCCB's big meeting where we have big news of a newly elected president and vice president. Monsignor, what are your takeaways from these two new bishops who will be leading the conference and the conference more broadly?
There was no surprise, Ashley, that Archbishop Paul Coakley was elected the president of the conference. He has the great support of many of his brother bishops. He's been elected to the offices there, and he'll do a very good job. He's a good leader. Everybody says he knows how to run an efficient meeting, where a lot of the bishops whose big cross each day is to sit through many meetings like to have a meeting that's efficiently done, that doesn't waste any extra time than would be necessary. He likewise is able to speak to people on all the major issues. He's extremely strong on the pro-life issue. He's likewise very strong on the immigration issue, strong on the death penalty issue. And so pretty much everybody very much likes him. He is the Archbishop of Oklahoma City. And so he comes basically with a strong mentality of the heartland. Bishop Dan Flores has been a bishop since his late 30s, very smart. He was the bishop's representative to try to lead the synodality discussions, both in Rome and over here in the United States. Because he's in Brownsville, Texas, he has a personal exposure and experience with the immigration issue, which is something that the U.S. bishops are very much united and focused on, which was quite clear during the meetings when Archbishop Broglio, the outgoing president of the conference, as well as Bishop Mark Seitz, who's the head of the Committee on Immigration, gave very strong statements about the humanity of all our brothers and sisters, and sort of launched the theme, "We will be with you." For me, as the National Director of the Pontifical Mission Society, Cardinal Dolan gave a 15-minute talk to all the brother bishops at the end of Tuesday's public session, in which he challenged all the bishops in light of the fact that next year will be the 100th anniversary of World Mission Sunday to step up to the plate and get a record. Wouldn't it be great, he said, if we were to hit an all-time record leading the people of the United States to really care for our brothers and sisters all across the world who need the greatest treasure of all, Jesus. Because as I never cease saying, Ashley, 5.5 of the 8.1 billion people across the planet don't have the treasure that we can talk about every week in Conversations with Consequences of knowing Christ as our Lord and Savior.
Well, certainly another thing that so many billions around the globe don't have is the very basics like food and comfort. And that's a fitting topic for my second question, which is this coming Sunday is the World Day of the Poor. Tell us about that, the history and its significance for the church.
We have a lot of annual observations in the church's liturgical calendar, but Pope Francis back in 2017 said we should have a World Day of the Poor in which the whole church focuses on poverty and on our poor brothers and sisters. And so we've been doing that. This will be the ninth time we're focused. The Pope always writes a letter with regard to that observation. And this year it's Pope Leo's first letter for the World Day of the Poor. He gave it to us back on June 13th so that we could prepare, but it was written within the context of the Jubilee of Hope, focusing on how not only do the poor have to have great hope because they don't have any security and material resources, so they're not going to be lost by putting their faith, hope, and love in mammon or the things that mammon can buy, but they also become a source of hope for all the rest of us. And this is something that when people go on mission trips, for example, to the poorest countries in the world, they come back just overwhelmed by how happy the people were, even though they had very few material possessions. And the reason for that is because they had to really rely on God so much more. And God delivers, not necessarily in the stuff we can't take through the eye of the needle, material possessions, but he does actually give himself, who is the greatest gift. And so Pope Leo's encouraging the entire church as we reach out to pray for and care for the poor, first, to learn from the poor how to be people of hope, and then likewise to grasp the point that Mother Teresa always used to say that the worst poverty is spiritual poverty when we don't know God. And so we need to look at our own situation and say, are we able to be richer and are we able to share the greatest wealth of all that is the treasure, the pearl of great price, with those who don't yet know Jesus?
Well, we thank you for this reminder of our call this Sunday and really every day to be close to the poor and to do that in a special way this Sunday. So thank you, Monsignor, for your time, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next week.
You're welcome, Ashley. God bless.
Every morning, the Catholic Association reviews all of the latest news and sends our subscribers a carefully curated collection of the most important news of the day. Items are specifically selected for a smart Catholic audience like you. Don't let the world take you by surprise. Subscribe to our daily media roundup at thecatholicassociation.org. Welcome to Conversations with Consequences on EWTN Radio. I'm your hostess, Ashley McGuire, and I'm very happy to have on the show Christopher Byrne. He is doing so much in the Catholic social landscape here in our nation's capital as the founder and president of DC Social Collective, which he launched in May of 2021 in response to a growing need for, I think, something everybody experienced, which was a need for authentic connections with other people during the COVID pandemic. With a background in marketing, communications, and event production, Christopher has grown DSC into one of the region's most dynamic communities for young adults, hosting premier events across DC, Maryland, and Virginia. Christopher, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley. I'm happy to be here and talk with you about all these exciting things that we've done for our community here in DC.
Yeah. So I've seen the DC Social Collective described as the largest and most consistent young adult social group. So tell us the story of how you started this. Was it an idea that came into your mind? Was it just something organic that grew into this? Tell us the story of how DC Social Collective came to be.
Absolutely. So let's jump back into 2020. So lockdown is in full effect. I think I was feeling pretty isolated after college when I graduated George Mason in 2019, and especially in 2020 when lockdown happened. I reconnected with my faith. I formed a Catholic men's group of about 20 guys. We would meet every Thursday at a pub in Fairfax, and really personally support each other and grow in fellowship with each other. The idea of DC Social Collective kind of started when I was in my men's group. I wanted to start a fraternity with the men's group and then grow it into a larger nationwide community. And the guys didn't really want to do that. They wanted to keep it small. And I basically took it upon myself to jumpstart what we know as DC Social Collective right now, where we started doing picnic events in Old Town Alexandria on the waterfront, inviting hundreds of young parishioners in the area from multiple churches. Those picnics blew up in like a matter of months in the summer of 2021. And then I grew it into a brand, developed a website, and really marketed it to as many Catholic young adults as I could. So that's really where the idea came from. It was kind of a post-COVID isolation a lot of us were feeling, and I wanted to give young adults a new way to reconnect after COVID, and then it just grew from there.
Well, it's interesting because I recently saw an article about how young people are moving away from dating apps. And I've been fascinated to see how many people are on dating apps. Young people you would think would have no problem getting a date, meeting someone. But people are kind of souring on that. And they said they're actually going back to old-fashioned, asking their friends to just set them up. So are you seeing a lot of people who come to your events who are looking for romance, for love?
Absolutely. I think it's kind of an unspoken notion that our events are a way for you to meet your future spouse. And that's the social value that we provide a lot of people. I think this age, we're so digitally involved on connecting with one another that it's not effective. You can't replace in-person connection on your phone. And so when we're relying on instant gratification to give us that next hit of dopamine on our dating apps, it just leaves us feeling empty, and that authentic connection's not there. So you can't replace two souls in one room or at an event together with being on your phone. So we use social media, we use digital communications to for a means to an end, and that end is to get people in person to authentically connect with one another. And we've seen marriages develop from people meeting at our events, getting engaged, getting married. I set one of my best friends up with his now wife. And so it's just really beautiful to see the fruit that has come from these in-person events.
So yeah, that was another thing that caught my attention, and your organization recently caught the attention of the Washington Post that was painting a broader picture about the dating scene in Washington, D.C. But I thought it was so great to see that you're actually people are getting married. I mean, that's really doing God's work. So that's a wonderful thing to see.
Special for sure.
So the Washington Post article talked a lot about the political angle of things, and certainly things, I don't think anybody would deny, the times feel more polarized than ever. Is that, do you sense that that's a barrier to entry for people coming to your events? Is that a frustration, or do people kind of set politics aside when they show up at your events?
Well, it's interesting because when we originally started DC Social Collective, I mean, we're pulling in religious, conservative audiences into these events. And since then, since it's grown from 2021 to now 25, I mean, we got everybody from across the spectrum as far as politics go. And we welcome everybody. And that's why we stay true to our meaning as a Catholic-based organization from the beginning, as being a universal invite to everybody's welcome. And I think when you come to these events, there isn't this sense of polarization. There's a strong sense of unity and connection. And these young professionals that are in the area, whether they moved out of state and recently just arrived in DC or Virginia or Maryland, they can feel at home and find connections that are like-minded, value-oriented young professionals that they can get along with. And so we've never had an issue with politics being involved, even though we are in the heart of the nation's politics right here. I mean, we have people from all across the map on that, so.
It looks like a lot of your events are dances. And when I was growing up, I used to go to a lot of dances, swing dances, school dances. And learning to actually swing dance and even some other types of dances, waltzes, foxtrots, that was a thing. I mean, maybe I was the last generation that went to cotillion, but we learned to dance, and dancing was always a wonderful, innocent, fun and flirty way to get together with others. Can people still dance?
Good question. And that is one of the that is one of the value that's some of the value that we offer to people that are coming to these events for the first time that may have not danced before. So we always offer a beginner lesson for each dance that we include. And dance is just one element of our events. I think you're right. It's a kind of a innocent, classic, timeless way of meeting somebody. It's very human. I mean, it's just it is timeless. There's no better way to break the ice than on the dance floor, in my opinion. And so, whether you're an experienced dancer, we have a lot of those, or you're intermediate, or you've never danced before, we always provide an instruction so people can feel comfortable and confident on the dance floor and really, mix and mingle naturally and casually. So.
So yeah, and I was thinking that a lot of it sounds like most of the people that go to your events are singles, but there's definitely a need for community and community social events for married people, family. What's the kind of breakdown? Are you really gearing towards singles, or do you do things for families and couples as well?
Absolutely. I just got out of a conversation the other day with a friend about this. We broke it down. About 75% of our audience are singles, 25% are married couples. And of that 25% are people that were single when they came to our events in the first place, found their spouse, and then they still keep coming back to our events because they love them so much. So we have so many great married couples in the area that keep coming back, whether it's our annual ball at Catholic University of America or it's our annual All-American Country Summer Nights in July. These people, it's kind of like a trip down a memory lane for them. They come back, they have a great time. And so you don't have to be single to come to our events. You don't have to be married to come to our events. It's welcome to everybody. And we've seen so many great couples come, especially for Valentine's Day. Every year we do a Valentine's Day event. So, I mean, it's a huge hit for singles because they're like, oh, I might meet somebody. And it's exciting. But we also offer a couples discount for tickets. So you can bring your partner, bring a date, bring your wife or husband. So we've really seen both segments of our audience come together in a beautiful way.
I saw a quote from somebody that works for the collective in an article, one of the articles I was reading, that said that DCS's foundation is the Thomistic concept that leisure, when rightly ordered, is necessary and even virtuous. I thought that was so interesting. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's a really kind of a deep quote here. I think in the Thomistic sense, leisure is not just time off, but it's participation in the good and beauty and community at its foundation. What we're trying to hint at here is we don't specifically program Catholic programming into our events. It's more of a natural way of getting together in community is a beautiful thing, and that's ordered towards God in and of itself. And so we don't just provide entertainment. These events are opportunities for people to really experience joy that's wholesome and life-giving by meeting others, by meeting people that are like-minded, just like themselves, that are starting their careers out, or maybe they're looking at creating a new business, or they're looking to date. And so I don't think you can really go wrong with a night of dancing, good music, and friendship and fellowship amongst our community. I mean, that in and of itself is a Catholic principle that, is part of our mission. And I think that mission has given us some great longevity in these last 5 years, and we're expanding and we're growing because of it. And so we owe it all to God. And the Thomistic principle is just by its foundation, it's a human, these are human interactions and experiences and good ordered fellowship and community. So, I love that quote, and I'm glad that we covered that in that article.
So the collective is addressing an issue that is really acute everywhere, but DC, something that I think is very unique about the DC area is there is so much There's so many young people and, opportunities to socialize with others. But there's a lot of places in the country that don't have anything like this. And I think, I was very struck by when I was looking at all your fun events that I wish I could go to. They look so fun. They're just beautifully put together. And they're clearly highly professionally organized. But, I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that bringing people together can be something simple too. What advice would you have for, somebody who's like you, yourself 5 years ago, who's just wanting to take the first steps towards bringing people together, whether they're a young single guy or, a mom looking to meet other moms? I mean, I see this question posted constantly on social media. People are just looking to meet up, but what would your advice be to those who are trying to form community where they are, who don't live in the DC area and can't go to your fun, awesome events?
Yeah, well, that's so great. I really appreciate the praise on that. We've had so many people reach out to us from out of state, especially when that National Catholic Register article dropped. We had people reaching out from LA, Miami, Ohio, California, all these places, Washington, and Oregon. Like, we had so many people reach out, and they were asking the same question that you just asked me. I think at the end of the day, it's very simple. What is the goal of bringing these people together? When I started DC Social Collective, it wasn't just an aimless, let's just get everybody and their brother and their sister and their mother together in Old Town Alexandria. I was like deeply involved in the Catholic community and in the young adult events that were going on in the area, and I saw this need for, this need to make Catholic events fun again. I think that was my goal. Where, I mean, you could go to a parish in the area, and it could be, on a Friday night at a church, and could be kind of stale and awkward. And I wanted to provide a unique experience for everybody that comes to these young adult events to meet up and enjoy live music, enjoy dancing, enjoy good ordered fellowship. So that was my goal in the beginning. And I think for anybody that's looking to do the same thing, I would always start with that one question: what is your goal? And pick a way of getting an audience that you want to get together. For me, it was, I'm in my 20s at the time. I was 24, and I want to mix and mingle with people of my age and that share the same faith, that share similar values. And so I really geared all my marketing strategies and Facebook and messaging to those audience members that I had in mind. And so I started small with my men's group, with local women's Bible studies, with young adults in different parishes around the DMV, and I just built my way up from there. Because at least at the, it's kind of like you mentioned earlier, when, setting your friend up with somebody is one of the best ways that you can really, achieve success in dating. Because I think there's a standard that your friend has already met by being introduced to your other friend, because they know each other, or like, you know them. And so for our events, I would say it's somewhat similar. There's a standard that we've already measured with our audience, where you can really be confident that you're going to meet some really great quality, like-minded young professionals that share similar values. So for anybody looking out there to do the same thing, it doesn't happen overnight, but if you do the right steps and ask yourself the right question and what your goal is, you can start, building community of any different interest, whether it's, career interest, or you're looking at, single moms nights on Wednesdays, or whatever it is. And you can trust in God to help you grow that, as long as it's ordered correctly. So.
That's really great. Well, we're almost out of time, but I'm dying to know if you have a favorite event, and then maybe can you give us a little forecast? We're heading into the holidays, and it's kind of peak social time. So, what are some
Absolutely.
things coming down the pike, and what's if you have a favorite, what's yours?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have a couple great, exciting events coming up this weekend. We have our Grape Gatsby at Old Farm Winery in Virginia. And so that's a very, very special, upscale, Roaring Twenties themed winery soiree. So very excited for that. And then we always do an annual Christmas ball. This year we're doing our second annual Christmas ball at Hotel Heron in Old Town Alexandria. Beautiful location. A lot of our audience members are in Old Town, so it's a great great convenient spot, and it's very upscale. So very excited for that. As far as my favorite event goes, I just am in love with our All American Country Summer Nights parties every single summer. We started it as soon as in 2021, we started our All American Country Summer Nights series, and it's just an amazing All American experience. It's something that everybody can enjoy. We always do a mixture of country line dancing, swing, and two-step, and we usually hire a band or a DJ for that. So it's just a very wholesome All American experience. So I look forward to that each year, and I'm looking forward to the events coming up in January. We're looking at doing another winery Latin night, so people can expect that in the wintertime. I think mixing salsa and mulled wine in a winery in the wintertime would be an amazing idea. So that's something in the pipe as
Well,
well.
this was very fun. Great talking with you, Christopher. Where can people find out more about how they can get connected and attend some of your events?
Absolutely. Well, we do have a website, dcsocialcollective.com. That's dcsocialcollective.com. We also have a great Instagram presence, so you can find us on Instagram at DC Social Collective. We also have a Facebook and a Facebook group that you can join. So all of these areas, you can sign up for our newsletter on our website and stay up to date with all the latest event invites. And we really welcome everybody, we encourage people to bring their friend or their roommate or their date, whoever it is. We can't wait to see you at the next event. So thank you so much for having me, Ashley.
Yes, thank you so much. This is something I wish existed when I was in my 20s, or even for those of you who are in your 30s or older. Sounds like a wonderful thing. So make sure to check it out and to attend one of his fun parties. And thank you, Christopher, for joining the show today.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
We'd like to take a moment to thank all of our loyal listeners who tune in each week to Conversations with Consequences. As you all know, the Catholic Association is everywhere. We were on TV to cover the conclave and the election of the new pope. We're in print, we're online, and we're on social media. We've just launched a new Substack to expand our media presence and offer more great content from a Catholic perspective. We're on X, and now we're on Substack for Catholic Conversations with TCA, where we're featuring exciting new interviews, commentaries, videos, and more, featuring our four fellows, Ashley McGuire, Mary Fiorito, Lee Sneed, and Betsy Fentress. And we'll be having guest columnists each week as well. Just recently, Ashley shared some little-known facts about soon-to-be Saint Carlo Acutis. Lee Sneed writes about her forthcoming book on infertility, titled Infertile But Fruitful, and explains why she decided to write the book. So many people had responded to her columns and podcasts on her journey toward becoming an adoptive mother that she felt called to write a full-length book about it. In Lessons from the Turnaway Study, Mary Fiorito writes about mothers who wanted to abort their children initially, but were turned away for various reasons and had a very different take on their initial decision as years passed. And Betsy Fentress writes on hospitality and the will to live about a friend's father and a family friend with no relatives who were brought back to life by food, attention, and love. We hope you'll subscribe to our Substack. It's free. You'll find it at catholicassociation.substack.com. And we'd love for you to join us in our continuing Catholic conversations.